Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
And good morning, good Saturday. We are live and lively here on University of KMOX. 2 hours today. Home improvement is the topic. The weather is around. Is it ever? Is it warm? Is it cold? It's St. Louis. It's both. Just wait. It'll change, and it is changing to single digits coming up next week. So batten down the hatches, prepare for the winter, and check your door locks, windows, weather stripping, all that stuff. That today and tomorrow are your best days to get outside. Prepare for the house and the coming deep freeze. Make sure your furnace is working. Any of you there may be thinking about, furnace filters? If you're not, you should. Yep. Well, Scott Mosby here. 2 hours. We have all kinds of phone lines for you. 314-436-7900, 436-7900, and 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. 2 hours today. Be prepared. And we will talk about ice melt above all sorts of things. You know, I mean, still, I promised last week to talk about this just a little bit, a couple weeks ago. We were off last week for the Cardinals winter warm-up. Great event. Always a nice break. Man, did we need it. Nice break to the winter. Yeah, early January, Cardinal winter. Anyway, so much for that. Lots of things happening around St. Louis. It's still a wonderful place, and we have a decent day today. A little bit of snow showers coming. Anyway, be prepared. I will talk about the various types of ice melt, calcium chloride, sodium chloride, which is salt, calcium chloride, magnesium chloride, and then calcium chloride acetate, which you'll see as CMA, potassium chloride. Anyway, all sorts of things. Some are more friendly to the plants and the pets. Pets are important because the pads of their feet, dogs, cats, whatever kind of critters, they absorb a little bit of that through the pads of their feet. So it's important that if you have critters, pets, or friends and neighbors, indoors or outdoors, keep that in mind. 314-436-7900, 436-7900, 800-925-1120. I invite your calls right now. If you have anything around the house, anything indeed that is important to you, get it fixed, get it updated, get it ready. Or, get prepared for when the guests come. You know, it's middle of the winter. We love to gather, get together. We still like our friends. Game night, I don't know about you, but, game night around the Mosby Hut generally gets pretty competitive, sometimes a little ruthless, always with smiles, hugs, high fives. The victor goes away smiling. The loser goes away smiling as well. 314-436-7900, 436-7900, 800-925-1120. Bring on those phone calls. I really do urge you to get outside. If you have a deck, a wooden deck, keep in mind that in and out of the house, whether you come through the garage, the driveway, the patio, the deck, the front porch, all of that, as well as your services like the postal carrier. Yeah, the mailman, mail woman, whatever. The postal carrier that brings your mail. It's important to keep that area clean. So it is your responsibility as a homeowner to do just that. Perhaps around the house, you're thinking of things a little more long-term than the weather, because this is the opportunity. This is the time to get started for a spring remodeling or construction project. Whether you're building a doghouse, whether you're building a deck, whether you're putting on a room addition, remodeling a bathroom, kitchen, whatever it is, and whether you're doing this professionally or not, I urge you to get started, because it takes some time to think through as a homeowner, think through what it is you're trying to achieve and how you'll know whether you get there or not. If you have no plan, they say if you have no chart, you have no plan, any plan will get you there. Any port will be just fine. So basically, when you start off driving somewhere, it's important to know, I'm going to San Francisco, I'm going to Chicago, I'm driving to Raleigh, wherever it is. And then you think, well, how much fun do I want to have? How long will it take? Well, likewise in a construction project. I think I want a new sink. Okay? oh, there's a faucet there. I guess I better get a new faucet. Oh, you know, I'd sure like to, if I'm doing that, maybe I'd sure like to have a soap dispenser. Ooh, a hand soap dispenser. Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe dish soap. A second, where would that go? Would that go on the same side as the faucet, on a different side? Can I get a sink like that? Who would I talk to? What kind of material? Would it be stainless steel, cast iron? What colors can I get? How deep? How wide? How noisy? How quiet? This is just a kitchen sink, folks. So you want to know what happens at Mosby Building Arts? We think about all that stuff. That's my day job, Mosby Building Arts. We've been in business now 72 years. I kind of enjoy it because it's a great business. You know, you build it, people smile, they give you a hug, high five, and then they, you know, hand you a check. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So anyway, I have loved this career, still do, and urge any of you to find your passion as well. But the proper way to study for a test at school, to take a test, is to study, prepare, think about it. What's going to be on the test? What am I strong? What am I weak in? What have I discussed? What have I missed? Well, likewise, I'm going to build a doghouse for Bowser. Well, okay, is it a big dog, a little dog? Well, how big do I want the opening? Because am I going to keep him out there in the winter? Then it's a smaller hole. How small can I make it before the dog can't get in or won't go in? Or how big I make it? Would I put food in there? If I do, would other critters like opossums, raccoons come in and mess with my doghouse and eating? All that stuff matters before or after you build the project. If you think about it before, planning, design, envisioning, discussion, decisions, then it all works out as part of taking the test or building the project. If you don't think about it, it's a collision, a failure, a problem in the end where you have to go back thinking about, oh, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that. So if you're expecting all those things to be really thought about up front, you as the consumer better be part of those conversations. Not because you know how to do it or not know how to do it, but as professional designers, architects, remodelers, all the stuff that we are professionally at Mosby, that's the part we can't fill. We can't say, you should have this. We can say, boy, you might want to look into this. This is a cool idea. Anyway, so much for that. 314-436-7900, 436-7900, 800-925-1120. And we're going to talk about a lot of things around here. Also, outdoors. When do you get ready for inclement weather? Whether it's winter. I mean, we've got some really hot summers coming around here, too. So, I mean, the time to think about that is before you need it. You know, it's kind of like a savings account. You know, the time to save is before you need the money. You know, all that sort of thing. So, anyway, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. When we come back, we're going to get started, and we're going to talk about hardwood flooring. I promise, right here on KMOX, Scott Mosby at your service. Happy to be here. 2 hours, 314-436-7900, toll-free, 800-925-1120. Scott Mosby here. I am at your service here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby it is here. 314-436-7900, 436-7900. Toll-free, 800-925-1120. If you've got that topic, that thing, that one question, this is your time. This is your opportunity. Bring it on to KMOX. Let's start off the phones here and see what's cooking with Dave. Hey, Dave, good morning. Thanks for getting us started on KMOX. How can I help? Hello, Dave. Missing you there.
Yes.
There, sir. I got you now. Yeah, okay, sorry. I'm button challenged here.
Thanks, Scott. My entire main floor is hardwood, and it was polyurethane when it was originally put in, and the kitchen and the foyer, the entrance, needs to be redone. The rest of it really does not. But it, so is it possible to just polyurethane one room, even though it's continuous hardwood?
How long ago was that original polyurethane put on, Dave?
Probably 8 to 10 years.
Okay. You know what paint matching is on a wall? Have you ever put new paint over old paint?
Yes, sir.
That's kind of what you're up against. And the answer is yes, kind of. It's really hard to feather an old surface to a new surface. Number one, because 10 years ago, just the formulation of that polyurethane might be chemically different than what it is today. Not much, but nonetheless the same. So the process to doing that, and then I'll get into the risk as well, is screening. You know, so the round open mesh looks like a screen on a window with an abrasive comp. They're very smooth, but you know, so very fine abrasive is to rough up the surface. Then where it comes to a door threshold, there's got to be some sort of a logical break, change, or transition spot. That on hardwood floors, one of the kind of promises and appeals and design tools is that there's no reference to a floor starting or stopping. So it's boundarylessness, you know, that you just have no trans. Well, number one, you're going to match the sheen. The point is on the other side of the door where you don't refinish it, that sheen is still abraded off. So, number one, you're going to have the problem of a new semi-perfect coated finish on the new urethane. Then you're going to have a lightly used but still scuffed finish. You know, then you get into the long and the short of it is, yes, you can, and really think about it, because on the expectations level, sometimes you wind up with brand new shiny, even if you get the sheen selection of the finish correct. This is something only a professional can do. If this is something you're asking me this question, you need somebody else to do this for you, and they'll probably tell you the same, like, yes, I can, no problem. But keep in mind, you're talking about a brand new car finish next to a 10-year-old car finish, even if it's the same paint. Yeah, brother, you're playing with fire. So the answer is yes. And because you can't really wholesale grind down your floors more than a couple of times anyway, it's usually worth the try. I just want to adjust your expectations because it gets good as good. You're going to wind up with good. The problem is the bad that, you know, the existing that looks pretty good now isn't going to look so good anymore next to that brand new stuff.
Right. Okay. Well, I wanted to know before I started talking to contractors.
Yeah, and you'll know. I mean, based on, you know, what you and I have just discussed, you'll know, because if somebody's looking for trouble and they're kind of reading you the chapter and verse of, you know, here's what you're up against, and, you know, some guys are just going to say, no, I'm not going to mess with it. Because if there's a bonding problem, and as for example, maybe you sealed your driveway or your neighbor did, and they put silicone on the concrete. Silicone is a contaminant for any kind of a coating. And if somebody walked in on your hardwood floor and they got a little bit of that on the floor and it soaked in through that finish, whatever it might, your floor is contaminated. So now the new contractor who doesn't get to do all of his magic tools and, you know, quality delivery, only half because he's refinished, now he's going to be on the other end of that phone when you say, you know, my new finish just peeled off, and it may have nothing to do with the delivery and installation of what that contractor did.
Okay.
Yeah, that,
well, Scott, now you answered my question. That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, if you want to know what we do at Mosby, this is it. You know, yes, you can, and let's talk about whether you really want to or not, because getting to your destination doesn't mean you get what you want.
Okay, well, thank you.
Right on. Okay, Dave, take care. Good question, okay. By the way.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. You bet.
Bye now. Good luck. And again, on those hardwood floor finishes, I alluded to having two sand abilities. And the issue is on hardwood floors, if you know what I'm talking about, it's a tongue and groove floor to where one has a protruding spline and it goes into a groove on the other part of the board. And this is irrespective of whether it's a 3/8 thickness, a half inch thickness of laminate engineered hardwood, or a full 3/4 or 5/8. That thickness down to that the tongue and groove part, generally you can only refinish it after it's installed two more times in all the years. So even though that hardwood floor might last a century or more, the finish likely will not. You know, so we can talk about this with phone lines 314-436-7900, 436-7900, and toll free anywhere on the globe, 800-925-1120. So in those two refinishings, and what we were talking about with Dave, is, for example, his choice is, let's pretend that floor has never been refinished. That's the good news. So they, you know, if it's a site finish floor, they sanded it once. Generally, you've got at least one more time, and generally two times before, and you don't really get to that tongue, that spline in between those boards. The problem is it gets so thin that those edges curl up drying, because the body of that hardwood floor stays at a fairly relatively constant humidity. But especially now when we're cranking on the heat and that furnace is just blowing out all kinds of stuff, it's hard to keep humidity in the house, and so the air is very dry compared to that moisture content of that hardwood floor or your furniture or your cabinets or your crown mold or your baseboard, anything that is wood that has joints. Right about now, January and into early February, when we're just really, you know, pumping the heat into it, that's where the joints open up, and it's because of shrinkage, just common moisture. Anyway, so that's very important, and what Dave's facing is, should I, you know, is my floor bad enough to grind one of my possible refinishing times off? Probably not, you know, so again, if he can screen it, and you'll find, you know, the better contractors will say, I will do this, but I will not warranty this. I will, here's where the problems could be. Here's where they aren't. And some of them just say, nope, I don't refinish floors until you're going to let me sand the whole thing down. And that is about the warranty. So if they have a really strong warranty that says you're going to be happy no matter what, they will refuse to do this. So it's kind of a partnership of shared risk, if you will. And that's what's important to talk about on any construction job. You know, whether you're having a bathroom put in the basement, when you're whether you're doing it yourself, venting the bath fan outdoors, indoors, up into the attic, how you properly do that as a do-it-yourself project. Any of that. Anyway, that's all important. Keep in mind, we've got some serious single-digit temperatures coming down next week, and what that means to you and what that means to me is make sure you keep the heat inside that house up. You may, when we get down to the 9 and the 6 and the 1 degree stuff, keep those cabinet doors open underneath the sinks. I would suggest turn on your furnace fan, your blower motor, let that run all the time. I know at 30 degrees on a nice, fairly decent day here, you know, but I'm not going to talk to you next Wednesday when it hits 9 degrees or 6. It's important that this be something in it. So turn your furnace blower on and let it run all the time. 24 hours it'll filter. Also, change your furnace filters. This time of year when you get a little dust, you know, the air dries out, so the dust particles aren't settling down and then getting blown around in a forced air furnace, just get caught into the filters. It's important, make sure, check those filters, see to it that you're able to, you know, they should be a little bit dirty, hopefully, if they're doing their job. If they're not, you're either very, very clean and nobody's really living in that house, not really opening the doors, coming in and out, or you're just not filtering the air quite the way you might want. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. I promised a little bit last week about the ice melt. Ice melt is important. We'll talk about that here coming up here, and I'll give you a little bit more. Soon we're going to have a guest. I think I got Kevin Welch coming in. He's got a pretty busy day today with his family and work, but from Helitech, he's going to stop by and talk to us here soon. I have it on good authority that he's really on his way, and he'll be here with us soon. So we're going to talk about the freeze, the temperature, the movements. If you think about water leaking basements, foundations, and all of that, when the big freeze comes, that's an extreme situation. So the actual frost line, or how far down the freeze penetrates into the soil, has a lot to do with, you know, what I do with construction and design and foundations, how deep footings go, how deep piers go for decks, front porches, frost walls along the face of a garage door. All those things are really important. 314-436-7900, 436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120. It's actually a nice Saturday here in St. Louis, as I describe it. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Remember, if you have concrete, sodium chloride, salt is not very good for your concrete, because that's the stuff that really is not good for cement, the actual binding glue inside of concrete. Concrete and cement are two different things. Portland cement is the glue, the real fine gray dust that gets mixed into concrete, and concrete has three or four elements. One is Portland cement, the other is aggregate, which is gravel of various sizes, finishes, colors, all of that. And then another aggregate, which is sand, which fills up all the voids in between all those rocks, or aggregate as we call it. And then the hydration, or the water that goes into all of that, that unleashes the chemical reaction that happens in cement. And as it dries or cures or creates heat as a byproduct, it actually glues all that stuff together. Anyway, Scott Mosby, Home Improvement, I've got time for you, and it's open for you for some great phone calls. 314-436-7900, 436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. I am Scott Mosby on CAMOX at your service.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby on CAMOX.
All right, back together. Home Improvement, CAMOX, so much to talk about. Things on the horizon. We have Kevin Welsh, who's going to join us here in just a few minutes from Helitech, so lots of things to talk about there. We have all things happening around the St. Louis area. If you're looking for things to do, actually, there are some seminars coming up here in the next few months. One on kitchens, February 9th, exteriors, March 9th, and bathrooms, April 27th. The one coming up on kitchens. This is a great opportunity to think about the appliances, the workspaces, the sink choices you might have, what the various choices are on one-third, two-thirds, big sink, deep sink, what the costs are, the finishes, all those things around kitchens and appliances. That's February 9th. That'll be at the MAC, the Missouri Athletic Club, or MAC West, starting 10:30. That's usually a Saturday. That's kitchens, February 9th, exteriors, March 9th, and the March 9th on exteriors as at the Lodge at a Pair. So February 9th, anyway, get on callmosby.com. You'll see all that under seminars up at the top. Right now, let's see what's cooking with my buddy Kevin. Hey, Kevin, are you around there? Good morning, my friend. How you doing?
I'm good, Scott. How are you? Good to see you.
Fantastic. Hey, sorry you couldn't make it into the studio. I'm glad you got us in by phone. It sounds like you're kind of a busy camper there.
Yeah, you probably don't want me around you today. I got a daughter
really?
Came home from school. Yeah, I got a daughter came home from school with strep, and she's passed some stuff around already.
The joys of parental oversight. Yeah, yeah.
So, well, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, my friend. You know, doggone it, just a little bit like I'm looking for some sunshine, but, you know, aren't we all? Yeah, what can I say?
Yep.
Hey, you're pretty busy out there running around. It kind of surprises me that with the deep freeze on the soil that people are still, you know, chasing you down for Helitech and foundation work.
You know, it's been a little strange this winter. We have been really busy, and it's not normal. And I think it's got a lot to do with the heavy snows that we've gotten. Mm-hmm. We got some pretty good rains that came in, you know, before them and with them. And the ground is super saturated. Right now it's frozen, so we're not seeing a whole lot of seepage, but boy, I tell you what, when this thaws out, I think we're going to be in for a doozy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you're right. Well, when you say when this thaws out, I'm looking at the forecast here, and I'm wondering, you know, golly, we're not even finished freezing it.
No, yeah, I know. I was looking. Did I read right? Maybe 9 degrees as a high on Tuesday or Wednesday next week.
Something like that. I want to talk about, you know, getting houses ready for this deep temperature in the coming hour here on the Home Improvement Show. So, you know, lots to talk about. And really, with that deep freeze, Kevin, you know, that soil, is it likely that that freezing ground, you know, that's pretty wet? I mean, we had some decent rains in the fall, and then this frost keeps freezing deeper and deeper and deeper. And I know in a swimming pool when I was a kid, that water expands and those, you know, pushes the barrels up. What does that do to the sidewalls of, you know, my foundation at home?
You know what? We're seeing a fair amount of that already this winter here with walls pushing in. So it's causing, you know, it's definitely causing problems. And, you know, you get that expansion and contraction of the soil and these, you know, extreme expansion and contraction, you know, movement. It causes issues for sure.
Wow. So that's part of what you're going to see. I mean, is there anything you can do about it right now other than be aware and keep your eyes open as a consumer? Go down and, you know, look for trouble kind of?
Yeah, I think the main thing is, yeah, looking around. I've got a client that I'm doing some work for out in the Western Corridor of St. Louis who got us out there, and we were able to catch it early. Still expensive, still an expensive fix, but we saved him a lot of money because we caught it early. So
yeah,
you know, it's definitely keeping an eye, looking around, looking for cracks. If you see cracks inside or out, get us out there. Let us take a look at it.
You know, that's important.
It might not be anything.
Well, when that wall pushes in, generally it doesn't go back out. You know, when the freeze goes away and the temperature in the summer comes, I haven't seen too many of those concrete walls that say, oh, great, you know, it quit pushing on me. I think I'm going to stand back up straight, you know, and then next winter it pushes over a little more. That's a good point, is realizing that, you know, getting it early matters on how much out of kilter a foundation can get.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, if you catch it early, we can stabilize it and stop it from moving any further. If you let it go and it gets too bad, boy, it turns into one heck of a project as far as, you know, excavation then to the outside, and you start getting into, you know, all whatever else you've got out there, patios and decks and all that come into play. And getting it early is a big, it can really make a big difference.
Well, Kevin, will you stick with us for a little bit and see if we can help answer a few questions here?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Scott.
All right. Kevin Welch, Helitech, standing by. Let's go to our phones and see what's cooking with my friend Dan. Hey, Dan, good morning. Welcome to Cam Wex and Kevin Welch of Helitech here. How can we help?
Yes, I had a water leak outside, and it was between the water meter and the house, and had a plumber go out and dig it up and make a repair. And he had said that I had a copper water line, and the copper was pitted. And so what he had suggested is to remove the copper and put in plastic. Now, the thing is he said he thought it was installed improperly because there's like a fine limestone that was placed where then they had the copper pipe, and then they put dirt over it. So my question is, what is, you know, copper versus plastic? Is there one better than the other? And if you have copper, how do you properly install a copper water line? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dan. This will be a little bit of a long answer here. A copper water line that is properly installed generally is backfilled with sand. Because of the grit. If you've got any kind of rocks or debris or anything in the backfill that can touch that pipe, for example, just one rock gets pushed in over the top of the copper water line, it's not a problem. And a year later, that soil settles. In 2 years, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, pretty soon there's a lot of weight pushing on that rock trying to cut that copper. That's number one. So the proper backfill is sand or something soft and not caustic, whereas limestone is an industry practice, but not an industry standard. And I'll get into what that kind of means with that a little bit, Dan. The industry standard is whatever those local tradesmen do. The recommended industry practice, which means the instructions on the manual for copper are putting it into concrete directly, some of those old radiant heat floors with concrete poured into, or copper pipes poured into concrete, they fail somewhere between 30 and 60 years for just the same issue. The pitting, it also has to think be considered of what type of water, how lime-laden, how hard your water is with that copper and how it gets along with the solder at the joints between the copper. The bottom line here is there are a lot of things. The right way to put in a copper water line is sand around it for 3-4 inches. Just carefully put it around and then start to backfill generally with the soil. The soil, any big aggregate, which means big rocks that can be pushed down and cut that copper, is a problem. Plastic, on the other hand, can almost be direct buried. You still have to watch the rocks, and if you backfill it with a little bit of limestone, a PVC water line is not affected by the base alkalinity of that limestone. And keep in mind that lime is called lye soap. Lye soap is very caustic. I mean, it will mess with your skin. And that is, so it's so base that it's off of, any of you that have had chemistry class, pH of 7 is neutral, everything's good there. You get up to a pH of 10 or 11, that's acetic, and that's caustic, so it'll mess with materials. And then you get down to the base, the lime stuff, you get down to a base of 4, that's a problem too. So anyway, my point is that when you do a plastic water line, I still recommend sand going in around there. You can use a fine limestone backfill, although I just prefer the sand just for, keep it simple, and then backfill the soil. Problem is, when you use a plastic water line, oftentimes you now need to call the electrician back in and reground that house, because your entire electrical system 20 years ago was grounded to the copper water line. In the last 20, 30 years, we've started using PVC. Plastic is not a grounding conducting material. So you can't ground the electrical system on a plastic water supply pipe. So now you may wind up with, replacing that with a plastic water supply line. Then you may wind up having to call the electrician to properly ground your electric panel. Anyway, there's much ado about your question there, Dan. I hope that's been helpful. So,
thanks.
All right. Are you get any more questions there, Mr. Dan?
As far as putting an anode or anything like that on it, would that help a copper line so that it doesn't react with the soil?
It will, but that deterioration is so slow, and some of it comes from the inside of the actual water itself, Dan. So just like on a boat, you might put, a sacrificial anode or something in a hot water heater to try and take the attack of those forces. So yes, you can, and no, it really won't matter. You're going to save 1 year out of 40 on your copper water line, but if you're in one of those places where you have a very hard water alkaline content, then you really need to have that conversation with your plumber. And plumber already knows. He pulled your pipe out. It's like, oh man, you've got problems.
All right, thanks.
So, all right, Mr. Dan, thanks for the call. All right, Kevin, you still there, my friend?
Oh, you bet.
All right. Hey, thanks for taking time to give us a call here with your daughter coming down with a little bit of it. Will you stand by with us here?
Oh, you bet. For sure, Scott. I'm with you as long as you like.
All right. You can't like a good penny. You just keep turning up, huh?
You bet.
All right. Kevin Welch, Helitech, Scott Mosby, KMOX. We're going to take a short pause right here and be back for more on the University of KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. 2 hours today. Stay tuned. A big afternoon here on University of KMOX. More to come. Stay tuned. More things happening soon. Phone lines are wide open for you. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Next up, let's talk to my friend John. John, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
I have a 40-year-old house, vinyl siding, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I discovered that some of the siding has pulled apart where there's a gap as opposed to the siding being overlapped. There's three places where it's like a half inch or so, and one where it's a little bit over an inch. And since it's wintertime, I decided it's probably too brittle to try to mess with it, so I just put some, not masking tape, but duct tape over the gaps. So when it gets warm in the summer, can I just take that tape off and pull it back together to make it overlap? And why would it have done it after 39 and a half years?
Well, why do you get wrinkles at 49, 59? You know,
hey, don't talk to this old person like that.
No, it takes one to know one, so it's my experience. My point is the plasticity in our skin and the plasticity in 40-year-old vinyl siding are rapidly changing, because think about the chemistry and the state of our, technology 4 decades ago. So number one, vinyl siding shrinks when it's cold and gets long when it's warm, so you know that. The issue is you're facing the end of the natural life of that vinyl material at 40 years. So it's starting to tell you that I'm wearing out. I'm going to need a little more attention than I have in the first 4 decades.
And I'm praying for a hailstorm.
That is the right answer. There you go. If you can get a hailstorm to mess it up, because the other side of it is if hail hits it without any plasticity, that stuff will break up like a big piece of glass. So
yeah, I know. I have really good homeowners insurance, so I'm praying for a hailstorm.
Well, if you notice, I'll tell you that it is kind of funny this way, because homeowners insurance companies are starting to send out things that say, all right, we know your house is 40 years old. If you don't have new siding or new roof or new whatever, we're not going to cover it. So they're figuring this out. So they know you and I are praying for a new hailstorm.
So, do I try to wait till it gets warm and then I slide it back? You know, I'm assuming that they didn't smack the nails on the nailer flanges.
Yeah, if after 40 years this is happening, it's really because the material is just wearing out. And yes, they will probably try and slide back. The problem is you need to be there when they get to the right length. When that half inch closes down, my guess is it's going to be somewhere around 50 to 70 degrees to make sure they lap the right way and not the wrong way. Otherwise, they can get butt to butt, end to end, and basically bubble and break. Because it's brittle. But big picture here is it's time to start considering a new siding on the outside of that house. So, you're going to go about it the right way.
Hey, Scott, can I interject something here?
I have a few pieces of scrap siding, so am I better off just to stick a couple of pieces of, like, 6-8-inch scrap pieces in there to cover the gap?
You can on the short term. The issue is then the new siding, the replacement, is not going to be quite as brittle as the old stuff, and it's not going to be the same color or sheen.
Right.
So it'll be like a polka dot out. But, yeah, it sure wouldn't hurt.
It's on the blind side of the house. I don't care.
Yeah, Kevin, did you have something there?
Yeah, I just wanted to throw this out there, and hopefully this isn't the case. I mean, it sounds like it's old siding, but I have seen where if there's a foundation issue going on where you've got movement of the foundation, maybe inward or even settling, I have seen where the siding can start to pull apart. Ooh. So you want to maybe make sure and look at your foundation and make sure you don't have anything going on there with cracking or maybe movement with that as well.
Okay.
That's a good point. It'll get worse as you go up. So the foundation will be maybe a quarter of an inch. The first floor might be a half inch, and your siding on the second floor could be an inch. So it could be exactly something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hopefully that's not the case for your sake. But, I have seen it. Not saying that's what it is, but it's worth a look.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay, John. Good luck, my friend. Thank you. All right. Take care. Bye now. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, Kevin Welsh, Scott Mosby here at your service. Kevin, what other things can people kind of be aware of? I mean, that's kind of a backdoor side thing, but that could be absolutely 100% real and accurate.
I tell you, Scott, too, as you've been talking this morning about, you know, the freezing and things of that nature, I've got two situations that have occurred in the last week. One on a pretty well-known restaurant here in St. Louis. They had a water main break, and it shut down the water to the bathrooms of the restaurant.
But what it did is it nobody knew about it for a few days, and then we went into this hard freeze, and boy, it buckled floors. It caused upward movement of the foundation, and same thing in a residential situation where, you know, the water main broke. People weren't paying attention or didn't know any better, and the next thing you know, they had a wall pushing in. You know, and, wow. And fortunately, in both instances, those are insurance claims, I believe. So it won't be anything substantial out of either of their pockets, I don't think. But again, something to just keep an eye on when you know, I heard you earlier talking about, you know, opening the cabinets and doing various things. Mm-hmm. One thing too that I've noticed, and I think people really need to pay attention to is make sure your water shutoffs to your spigots are turned off. And your hoses are disconnected and all that, because those things, those drips and or those leaks, and all of a sudden, you know, you got a big leak going on out there, and the next thing you know, it freezes and it pushes a wall in. So just little things for people to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's a good point, and thank you for bringing up the hose spigots on the outside. If your hose is connected, there is water still trapped in that outside hose spigot nozzle, if you will. By disconnecting that hose, that allows the water to drain out of an antifreeze faucet. And if it doesn't drain out, that whatever the material is, it will not be good. And the problem is you won't know it's a problem until after it thaws out. So when you're in the deep freeze,
right.
You know, yeah, you've seen this, Kevin, you know, in the deep freeze, I'm good. I got away with it. It didn't freeze. And then it gets up to 40, 50 degrees, you know, 24, 48 hours later, and all of a sudden the water starts flowing. It's like, well, it didn't freeze now. Well, you're right. It froze 4 days ago. So.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and just a good time to get out and look at your gutters, too. I know it's cold. I know it's not fun, but, you know, before we start getting into rains and all that with all this, you know, moisture and stuff, there's water frozen up in the gutters. And make sure your gutters, the debris in your gutters is gone, because we start getting rains on top of everything else. You know, it could start causing gutters to back up, and then you got other issues, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, will you stick with us on the second hour here, Mr. Kevin, and stick with us for... All right. Kevin, well...
Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right. This is KMOX. Scott Mosby, Kevin Welch here with you. Kevin Welch of Helitech Foundation and Waterproofing. Yeah. Then Kevin standing by. Scott Mosby here. Phone lines wide open for you. 314-436-7900. 800-925-1120. One more hour until the KMOX day continues with more experts. Again, 314-436-7900. 800-925-1120. Want to get into a little bit here at the opening part on the various types of ice melt that are available out there and some of the things that are healthier for concrete than others. If you've got asphalt or wood, anything that's not made out of stone or concrete, just about anything will do. But keep in mind that if you put salt out on the deck, that grit salt, rock salt, will stick to the bottom of your shoes, and you can literally grind off the clear finish from your hardwood floor, your vinyl floor. Doesn't really mess too much with ceramics and marbles too much on the abrasive part. But when you get into, you know, sodium chloride, you know, the stuff that comes out of the salt shaker, it's pretty rough stuff on concrete. Now, calcium chloride, not sodium, calcium chloride is probably good for concrete, you know, all around, no big deal. So keep in mind that's a good thing. Magnesium chloride is a good ice melt as well, but magnesium chloride can be used, and it's a little friendlier on plants and animals. And then there's a calcium magnesium acetate, CMA, you'll see that. And it's also, you know, it's good, it's pricey, but it doesn't, it below a negative 7 degrees or about 20 degrees, it doesn't work anymore. Potassium chloride is a good one anyway, but just keep in mind that if you're doing something with pets and such, you know, that's probably your various types. That's part of the decision. It's, you know, so magnesium chloride better than calcium chloride or sodium chloride. CMA, good one, is the second choice. Anyway, I just wanted to get into that, and beware, the best time to put that down is before the snowfall, before the ice. And again, timing is everything, but if you put that stuff out on the concrete and then you get a two-hour rainstorm, the rain will just wash it away. And put out what you need, no more, because the excess, you know, will wind up going down the sewers, you know, then, you know, Metropolitan Sewer District, for those of us in St. Louis, the various municipal water and storm sewer supplies, ultimately stuff all goes to the rivers. So whatever you're putting on your driveway, sidewalk, you know, any of that, you know, winds up in the river. So use what you need, only what you need. So anyway, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. With me now, Kevin Wells, standing by here, doing a little bit of duty with his daughter, taking care of a sick daughter. Kevin, you still with us there, my friend? Hello, Kevin, are you still with us there? All right, he may be doing daughter duty here. Anyway, well, Kevin's standing by with us here, so much else going on there. Let's go to the phone line, see what's cooking here with my friend Doug. Hey, Doug, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for lunch on KMOX. How can we help you?
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question about, so in a control crack in a basement floor, does it help or hurt anything to put any sort of caulk or material in to help fill that, yet leave it soft enough whereas that floor flexes? Is it worth any time to do that, or is it not? The other thing I ask is the whole discussion around radon and how that comes into houses, if it helps in that process if there's radon around. Just curious.
Oh, well, you know, Kevin, are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, let me start out, because the caulk doesn't really matter one way or the other for the basement floor, but when you start throwing radon around, like gassing come through from under the soil, caulking those basement joints become very important. So absolutely, Doug, when you start playing around with any possibility, and if you're in the state of Illinois, caulk it, period, because the state of Illinois has a very high concentration or it just shows up a lot more. And frankly, in my house, I live in Missouri, I caulk all that stuff anyway, just because I'm a neat Nick. You know, I like things buttoned up. And there's the possibility of radon. So, you know, I don't necessarily want the radon gases to seep into my house. Kevin, do you have any input from a foundation or concrete point? Certainly an issue, I guess, for water.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I would I'd put a flexible caulk in there. Mm-hmm. That way, if you do get some moisture under the floor and the floor moves around a little bit, hopefully it'll flex with it some. I wouldn't put anything rigid. Some people try to use like a hydraulic cement, and I wouldn't do that. I would use a flexible caulk.
Yeah, that concrete keeps on moving, doesn't it?
Yep.
Any specific brand recommendations or anything to look for in when I shop for caulk at, you know, generally the box stores, anything to especially look for that would be helpful?
Not silicone.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I like that. Yeah, I like that Vulcan, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a urethane, a one-part urethane caulk, just like polyurethane, only it's just urethane. It's going to be $6 or $7 for a 10-ounce tube. In the big 30-ounce tubes, it's more like, you know, $30 or $20. Anyway, my point, Doug, is silicone sticks to steel and glass really well. It does not adhere to a wet cement or stone material very well. So if you've got something that gets wet, and you know the dirt underneath your basement floor has humidity in it, healthy humidity. So I would use something, you know, around the urethane. Generally, when I'm caulking around, you know, my house, I'm using some sort of a urethane, because the labor, whether free or expensive, costs you the same each time. The longevity of that investment of labor then is expanded, you know, when you get better material. It's kind of like putting a roof on the house. It's like, well, how good a roof should I put on? It's like, well, the labor is about the same. You know, but you can have that roof last 40 years well on a urethane caulk. I don't like latex. It's not a good one for waterborne. It does cure out pretty well. Don't like silicone. Urethane is a good one. Vulcum. There's an MD Macklenburg Duncan on there. But anyway, that's what the big boys use when they're caulking.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, Doug. And one other thing, caulking that joint in that basement floor doesn't fix what Kevin Welch does. So I say, you know, go ahead and caulk it for the radon. But if you've got a little moisture coming through, you know, it's a good thing to caulk it, but it probably will move to the side walls of the house and come in another way. If you've got something like that that recurs, then that's a waterproofing foundation issue there.
Great. Yep. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Doug, thanks for calling. All right. Kevin, thanks for the help on that. The cementitious thing, you know, people think, well, I'll just, you know, for example, on a front sidewalk, you know, walk out on a, it's a concrete front sidewalk. It moves a little bit, and I have people say, well, I'm going to put sand and cement in there. Well, yeah, but, you know, you think about, John, who had siding in the first hour that gets long and short and long and short, that concrete sidewalk gets long and short as well. And it'll grind that sand and cement right back out, whether it's your driveway going up to your foundation at the garage, in between the cracks of your sidewalk, even caulking the joints in between a driveway, I think that's important. So those are, you know, self-leveling urethane caulks typically are what we use around driveways.
Yeah, so. For sure. And that's, you know, that's something that we always recommend after we, when we're doing like a poly jacking of slabs of driveway, we'll recommend that, hey, you need to, you know, seal these cracks up and close them up. Prevents that moisture from getting under there, which can cause them to start moving again.
Yeah, the erosion. I mean, if you polyjack the foundation, you know, the slab, it comes up where it's supposed to be. But then the new rain comes, and if you don't keep the rain out from underneath that slab, it'll just erode the soil right out from underneath all the magic you at Helitech just installed.
Right.
And you're back to the races. House.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So you got to. Just doing that isn't going to solve the problem altogether necessarily. You've got to go to the next step and get that water away from your concrete. It's just never good.
Hey, Kevin, how do people get a hold of Helitech, by the way?
We've got 1-800-246-9721. That's our direct line into the office. Or www.helitechonline.com.
Okay. Hey, will you stick around with us?
You bet.
All right. Kevin Welch, Helitech, Scott Mosby, Camo X. We have phone lines open, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120, anywhere on the globe. But keep in mind, if you're local, 314-436-7900. And Kevin Welch, Scott Mosby, standing by here on University of KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, back together, Kevin Welch of Helitech, Scott Mosby, KMOX. We are live and lively at your service, as Mike Miller likes to say at the KMOX Garden Hotline. You know, I like Saturdays. I enjoy the Saturday lineup, the weekend line of Sundays as well on KMOX, but you know, I also listen pretty much throughout the week. You know, those of you who are Kim White's lawyer listeners, you know who you are. We have phone lines, 314-436-7900, 436-7900, 800-925-1120. Kevin Welch is standing by from Helitech. Kevin, you there, or how's your daughter doing there? I know she's a little under the weather there.
She came home for a couple of days, rested up, and she's actually on her way back to Kansas City right now, so all is good now. But she came home and spread it around a little bit.
Oh, lucky you, man!
So, yeah, I'll get over it.
Okay, will you stick with us here a little, Kev?
You bet.
All right, Kevin Welch, Helitech here. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to Scott. Good afternoon, Scott. Scott Mosby and Kevin Welch here. How can we help?
Question along the same lines about driveway and concrete cracks and all that. My driveway has cedar boards in between the pads, and those have kind of rotted away in some spots. Should I try to replace the cedar boards, or should that be caulked?
Well, I've done both. Both are pretty labor intensive. The caulk lasts longer than the cedar board. So those cedar boards that were put in, sometimes it's an asphaltic expansion joint. They're to keep those concrete plates a certain distance apart so that when they get hot in the summer and they get bigger, they compress whatever that material is. As Kevin described for the the basement floor, that, keeping water from getting underneath those slabs and eroding out, because when the water goes flowing in between those joints, it goes out somewhere, and when it escapes, whether going down the hill to the creek or whatever it is, it carries with it soil, and that erodes out underneath those concrete slabs. Number one, you can indeed put the cedar back in. You're going to wind up caulking both of those in, wedging. So typically, those concrete slabs are not exactly 3/4 inch or any more. So pulling the cedar boards out, that's step number one. Getting it very clean and dry is important as well. And then if you want to put cedar back in, you almost have to plane and shave, customize, or scribe those boards to slide back in between the concrete plates. And then you have to use shims to jam in on each side to hold the wood right there. And then you're effectively using a urethane caulk to kind of glue them in place as well. Now, it's involved. It's pretty, but it doesn't last very long. Because your cedar then starts going, it stays wet all the time. And then it'll start warping because the top of that cedar is uber dry and what's down below the concrete surface is pretty humid. So you're going to have some – anyway, so bottom line here is I like to caulk those joints. They don't have to be as ugly as just a big 3/4 inch caulk joint. For example, if you've got a white magnesium or troweled surface, you might have a swirl or a sand finish. I try to match that sand, and most concrete has a what's called river sand. It's kind of a brown or gray. If you have Merrimack sand, then it's an orange. It's a bright-colored sand in aggregate as well. So I like to use very dry river sand, and it usually comes in bags, and then a self-leveling urethane caulk. Stuff is pretty pricey, so you'll need a backer rod, somewhere around 3/4 inch. Push it down just a little bit below the surface of the concrete so that the maximum caulk joint is about a half inch thick. You don't need 3-4 inch deep concrete. That's like buying a new car. I mean, you can spend you can dump a ton of caulk down there. Right. All you need is a surface, and then as soon I like the self-leveling or semi-self-leveling. If your driveway is level side to side and it's not really going down a hill or incline, you can use self-leveling concrete, which pours out a little thicker than water. So you have to, dam up the two ends of the joints after it's clean and dry. And I like to blow it out either with a leaf blower or a compressed air or something like that and let it really dry. It really matters.
Okay.
And then the semi-self-leveling is kind of like a syrup consistency or viscosity. Mm-hmm. And right after you get that stuff down, you get it leveled up. And it may take two lifts because it's, a half inch of caulk at one shot's a lot of stuff.
Right.
And then at the top surface there, Scott, I'll dust that dry river sand on it so that the stuff is, as soon as I get it placed, it's wet, and whatever you put on it will stick, including your fingers.
Okay.
So then you put that dry sand. If you use wet sand that's been stored outside, it won't stick because the moisture will stick but not the sand. So you want dry sand and put too much of it on there. So I just dust it on down, and I'll sweep it back and forth to make sure that there's 100% coverage on that caulk. And then just leave it alone. Just don't mess with it. And, come back the next day. Even if a dog walks across it at night, they're going to walk on sand. Yeah. And then when you sweep it away, you'll be looking at this dusty, sanded, colored surface that's stuck into your grout or your caulk. It looks just a whole lot better than any color caulk you can pick.
Okay, what about, I had a neighbor tell me something about that Lowell's had that was a vinyl push-in, came in a roll and you pushed in the crack.
That could be the backer rod. If it's a caulking material, I'm not a fan of that stuff. There are a lot of things that appeal to retail sales that sell good, live bad.
Okay.
And all of us have been in houses that are wow houses that sell good, live bad. It's like, wow, fantastic room. What a foyer. What do you do with that? You know, unless you have, you know, a family of 20 and 100 friends there each day, it's hard to fill up a space.
Okay, right.
So, be aware what it is. Just because they sell it and you like it doesn't mean it works.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
All right, Scott. Thanks for the call there.
Oh,
all right.
Good day. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Thanks, Scott. Home Improvement, KMOX. We've got Kevin Welsh, Scott Mosby, and we are at your service. Kevin, do you have any experience caulking? I mean, when you at Helitech do the poly jacking or the mud jacking on a slab, do people ask you about caulking slabs at all on that?
No, yeah, often, because we're, you know, not only are people, some people are aware of it, but we're recommending it, and it's something that it's something that we've played around with. We're not really full bore into it yet because it's hard to make any money at it. But there's companies out there, you know, small independent guys that go around and do it. And it is an art. It is definitely not something that you don't think that you're going to go out there and do a whole driveway and knock it out in an hour. It's probably an all-day project, maybe 2 days on a good-sized driveway. And you got to be you just got to take your time with it because it's tedious. You know, you talked about the self-leveling or semi-leveling, you know, the sag, no sag. I mean, those things can run on you like crazy. And if you don't have them dammed up on the ends, then you've got it running all over. Next thing you know, you got stuff all over your concrete. You can make a mess fat real quickly. So you want to, you definitely want to take your time and go about it and maybe put your earbuds in and listen to the Scott Mosby show while you're doing it.
Yeah. If you want a problem, drive through self-leveling or semi-self-leveling caulk after it's placed. We've actually been on a project where somebody was having their driveway caulked, and the homeowner didn't realize it, backed out of the driveway and drove down and striped the tires on the car, threw that stuff up on this phenomenal automobile, and tracked it all the way down the driveway. And, man, oh, man, that's a tough... Yeah, ouch, no kidding. So that's why, you know, there aren't a whole lot of companies out there that do the caulking. There are commercial companies that do this. They are available, but, you know, by golly. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah, some of the tuck pointing companies will do it as well, but it's not, I mean, it's expensive because, again, it is labor intensive. And the material's not cheap either.
Yeah, and if it doesn't take a long time, all you did was blow away a bunch of good material. So,
yeah, for sure.
All right, Kevin. Are you gonna, you got a little more time, or are you heading back to family duties?
I'm with you to the end if you want me.
Okay, well, stick around there. Let's take a short pause and come back for more. Kevin Welch, Helitech, Scott Mosby, Cam Wex. We've got a good call coming up here right after we get back.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, back together. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby here. We have all kinds of phone lines open. 314-436-7900. Toll free, 800-925-1120. 800-925-1120 and 436-7900. Let's go to Patty, see what's cooking with her. Hey, Patty, good afternoon. Welcome to KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. My question pertains to my villa. I share a common basement with my next-door neighbor. They smoke, and I have smoke coming into my home. I wonder how it can be blocked.
Ouch. That's difficult. Do you have a forced air furnace that actually blows the hot and cold air winter and summer?
I do, but that furnace is separate from my neighbor.
Yes, but if you have, for example, a fire pit outside, forced air houses, basically, they create a mechanical suction on the ductwork, and they aren't necessarily balanced. So what I'm long and the short of it is your neighbor's furnace and heating and cooling system is inhaling air from your unit, and your unit is inhaling air from their unit, and if you have an outdoor, it's actually pulling air through the outdoor wall as well. This gets into building science of build it tight and vent it right, so you get to choose where the leakage happens. But typically houses Even built new today, unless it's a real custom-built home where the homeowner really wanted this kind of ceiling service, and, you know, it's like the caulk conversation we had, you know, doing a good job to seal up the air leaks in a house when it's being constructed or remodeled is very time-consuming, and you have to know where to look to block those things. Long and the short of it is, Patty, I don't have any really good answers for you, but I would offer a blower door test. The first way to go about doing this on what we in building science or all that is air infiltration is a blower door test, which is basically a big fan stuck through the door of your house to the exterior, and it draws such a terrible suction on your home that it makes everything leak. Air comes in around your windows, your doors, your threshold, sometimes through the mortar on the bricks. And then, you know, we as technicians go around the house with various detection devices looking for those induced leaks, or air infiltration, as it's called in scientific terms. But basically make that thing leak so badly that you know where everything is, and then try and measure the amount of leaks, identify them, and then go through the hit list, top 10 of where the big leaks happen. If you have an attic scuttle or basement, usually a garage door to a lower shared basement like that, those usually leak terribly. Recessed light cans from 30 years ago weren't even sealed, so there's an enormous amount of air infiltration or leakage that comes around the rough-in housings. And only sealed units, when we got into the last 20 and 10 and 5 years, are even being installed today, because nobody knew they were a problem. You know, 30, 40 years ago, houses leaked a lot, but they didn't have any of the mold problems, no moisture buildup. Well, because they were built out of a screen door, basically. Well, now when you live next to a smoker, you know just how, you know, leaky your unit is. How old is your unit?
The unit was built in 2004.
You've got a pretty good chance then. 2004, they built them a lot tighter than in 94 and 1984. But it's is there a time of day that you notice it more than not?
Early in the morning and late in the evening.
Is that when they're there?
No, they're there all day long.
Okay, wow.
I have an open stairwell to the lower level. I don't know if that is causing more problems or not, but I can't do anything about it.
I would, where is it that you live? What part of town, Patty? You in Missouri or Illinois?
Missouri.
Missouri. I would suggest calling for a blower door test. There are, I'll give you the history of, it used to be energy audits. And, you know, a real energy audit with a blower door test and a duct blaster, all of that stuff used to cost $600 or $800. But we came up with the same 10 list of, okay, here's what you do first, second, third, fourth. So it was a pretty predictable list after doing all that testing. For you that are that's looking for that for a health and quality reason, you're looking for a blower door test for a full energy audit, and you're probably going to spend somewhere between $300 and $800 for that. But without doing that, there won't even be a hint as to where the Dutch boy sticks his little finger in the hole in the dike without knowing where those holes are. So I would advise you to get somebody to do a blower door test, and it may be through an energy audit. And don't be surprised, because a lot of the utilities will do this for $50. They don't do blower door tests because that really takes some time. They walk through the house and they come up with the same top 10 list that, you know, a full energy auditor would. But when you're talking about health, quality, you know, and like cigarette smoke, the only place to start is with a blower door test, because you need to know exactly where and how much.
And who does that?
You're welcome to call our office. I'm not sure who does the full blower door tests anymore, because the $50 or free things done by the energy utilities has been effective at saving energy, but it's not the same thing as a real tested air leakage, you know, blower door test. So give us a call at 314-909-1800. We've got a referral list, and we'll put you on to somebody that can help you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, Patty, good luck. I know you're in the big leagues, too. I mean, this is tough. This is really tough.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right. Take care. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, CamWax, Kevin Welsh standing by. And let's take a short pause here on the University of CamWax and come back for more after this.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, back together, Scott Mosby, at your service here in really part of the KMOX family. Happy to be that, and welcome to you. Thanks for joining us here in the studio, Kevin Welsh, Scott Mosby. Let's go to the phones, fire them up, and talk to Rick. Hey, Rick, Scott Mosby, and Kevin, how can we help you, friend?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I had a question regarding a screened-in porch that we're sort of upgrading. Mm-hmm. It's a relatively large, about 12 by 25. It's got a lot of screen surface area with about 16 inches of sort of wainscoted finish on the bottom. And we're going to have to rip all that out when we put the new flooring in there, probably put some slate or tile, we're not sure which. But I want to figure out how to leave enough space in that seam where the new wood or whatever surface we put on will now meet the new floor, but yet leave room for water so I can squeegee it out, but also not have so much that we can have rodents come in there.
Rick, what is the material on that bottom section of wall, the 16-inch tall thing?
That's just wood right now.
Just wood. It's tough, though. The way typically that is done to leave enough space below is a little bit of a problem for bugs and such, so that's why it's not commonly done. But you can put the bottom track of either the aluminum frame when you're rescreening that, so there are companies that do all new aluminum screens, and if you ask for that, they will actually set that thing up maybe an eighth of an inch to allow, you know, the water to drain out. Because it inevitably blows through the screens. Another thing is there's kind of a plastic surface that is kind of like a sliding storm window also available if you're willing to do that, and it limits or minimizes the amount of water that comes through there. But if you're, you know, where you are now with a wood bottom there, the only way to really get at that is to saw out a section of that bottom plate, which is problematic. And the other thing is you need to know which way the floor slopes, where the dips are in that, and then make sure that your tile either follows that or directs those new water paths in the floor on top of the tile out those same openings or apertures to get to the outside. You follow me on that, Rick?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Bottom line, it's not a real easy trick to get this thing, you know, draining right. And frankly, you may be able to limit some of this with this plastic sliding. I don't know the name of it. We've installed it several times, and it's just a slick system that opens and closes fast. It's not as tacky looking as sliding storm windows, and it's a screen. It's a pretty slick system, so that's available out there.
Okay. Maybe just at a big box store like Lowe's or something like that, would they carry it?
No, we use a company called Broadview Screen, and they've been doing it. Basically, they're the guys that put in the screens on, you know, for most of the contractors, but it's Broadview Screen. And it's if you do a little bit of searching online, you'll see these types of systems, and they're not real expensive, but they're, you know, two times, you know, the cost of screening it in, but you're going to buy all new screens, all new frames. The issue is when it's time to rescreen it, you just pull out the spline and you put the screen back in. So anyway, but that's one way to limit the amount of water coming in if you're willing to close these puppies when it rains.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Rick. Hope that was helpful there.
Yep. Talk to you later then. Thanks.
All right, take care. Next up, let's see what's happening with Sherry here. Hey, Sherry, Scott Mosby, Kevin Welch here. How can we help you?
Hi.
Hi.
I live in a home that's 60 years old.
Okay.
And I'm planning on landscaping the front yard. Right now, there's really nothing there. Okay. The home has had a problem with water. We had to put a sump pump in. There was a crack. They had to dig down and patch that. and the contractor is wanting to put rock against the foundation and then pavers. And I'm concerned about the rock and water. Is that going to cause more water to seep down against the foundation?
Boy, Sherry, you want to light up Kevin Welch and Scott Mosby. You just asked the incendiary question. You betcha.
Yep.
You betcha.
That rock acts like a filter. Yep, it definitely, it can, depending on how deep they put the rock, but yeah, it can act like a very quick filter.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Just keep in mind, I, again, and you hear Kevin talk about downspouts, freezing gutters, drainage. You're smart enough to have asked that question. So somewhere in your heart, you suspected this to be true.
Yes.
And we're here holding your hand to say, Sherry, you're right.
Yeah, well, and the contractor's pushing the rock, of course. It's more expensive.
Well, for this paver, that gravel is required. It is necessary. But keep in mind that, you know, getting the water at least 6 feet away from the foundation with either solid soil and runoff, and Mike Miller calls St. Louis the, you know, Midwest mulch capital of the world because everybody likes to, you know, leave the soil sloping toward the foundation and put mulch on that slopes away and then think the water is good, and it just isn't. You know, then you're calling Helitech and getting them over to do all the rest. So beware the power of making the water run even more next to your foundation with landscaping, paving. Yeah, and this is where you need the left hand to know what the right hand is doing, and everybody gets a vote, and you don't move forward till they're all happy. It's, you know, it's kind of like Congress, but, you know, if you don't do it, you don't wind up with a foundation that is effective, even with the investments. So that's kind of why I like to partner with Helitech, because they'll tell you no. It's like, no, don't do this.
Yeah, well, that I had that in the back of my mind. And, you know, I've already put a sump pump in. I don't want any more water problems downstairs.
Yeah. Kevin, you were sneaking in there?
Yeah, I was just going to throw some. Yeah, sneaking in here. Sherry, do you have a drain tile system that runs to that sump pump, or is it just a sump pit with a pump?
It's just a sump, the last thing you said.
Just a pit with the pump, okay. Yeah, I would be leery. I would be careful. But if you had an interior perimeter drain tile system, such as our HydroWave product, then I would say you probably would be fine with that rock, that filter. You know, if the water's running through that rock as a filter and it's coming down in around the footing, you know, the drainage system would collect it and take it to the pit and pump it back out. But if you don't have that perimeter interior system, I'd be careful.
Okay. And that's a drain? It's a drain tile that would run the length of the house?
If you put in a sump pit with a pump, a lot of times they'll bust out about 10 to 14 inches of your concrete floor from the foundation going outward, and then take that concrete out, dig a trench, and put in a drain tile system that runs to the sump pit. So it collects the water, runs it to the pit, and then the pump pumps it out. So if you didn't have any concrete busted out other than just where the pit is located, then you probably don't have an interior system.
Yeah, and in a 60-year-old house, what was put in when the house was built to handle this underground water has probably filled up a long time ago with mud.
I'm sure.
So if you have a leak over on the left front corner of the house and you don't have a pipe moving to the right front corner, for example, where your sump pit might be, you may have a leak on the left front and it just comes in and that sump pit still is dry. So that's what Kevin's talking about. You've got to connect the dots between the leak and then the water gathering and movement and then the exhaustion, which is that sump pit that gets rid of the stuff once it gathers it all up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and like you mentioned... I'm sorry.
Yeah, if they're only putting in, you know, say 3 to 4 inches, maybe 6 inches of a rock bed to lay those pavers on,
that's, when you agree, Scott, that's probably not going to change much.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So keep in mind, there's foundation waterproofing, and then there's a low price to make you feel good. Doesn't usually mm-hmm. work. So just beware. You're having enough sense to ask this question, which meant you knew kind of the answer.
I did, but I needed an expert to verify what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Now pouring concrete next to the foundation is a little better, but then you have to caulk that. Pavers do let water come through. It's called a semi-pervious. It basically means it lets something come through it a little bit. Concrete's less. It's considered an impervious surface, asphalt. But, you know, you don't necessarily want concrete all the way around your house either. It's just not as pretty.
No. Right. Well, I mean, he is going to put mortar between, he gave me an option of, you know, different kinds of pavers. Like one of them's natural stone edging. Yeah. He's going to put mortar in there. But, you know, it's been such a long time that I put that sump pump in. I probably need to look at, you know, my receipt and you know, the description of the work that was done.
You know, do me a favor. You're kind of in over your head here. I think it's time to get the doctor to your house, you know, get a house call. I'd invite Kevin or cohorts over because there's no charge to this. They're going to give you their opinion. But if, you know, I mean, 60-year-old house, you got some splaining to do, as Ricky used to say to Lucy.
right. And the number for them? I'm sorry, I don't know it.
What you have there, Mr. Here, Kevin?
You got it. It's 1-800-246-9721.
21. Okay, I will do that because, you know, like you said, I'm planning ahead for a spring project, but I want to know some of these answers, so I will do that. That sounds great.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Just good due diligence on. Yeah, good job, Sherry. Way to follow your heart there.
really,
good consumerism is just asking what if and why not.
Well, I've done a lot of different things around this old home and not asked the questions before, so I've learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I will call Kevin and have them come out.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry. Take care.
I look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hey, Kevin, thanks a lot. I appreciate your giving up your time here today. You know, you're a yeoman there. Appreciate carrying the water for us here on KMOX and taking care of our listeners like Sherry.
Always a pleasure to join you, Scott. I'm back with you here in 2 weeks and look forward to it every chance I get. So it's always entertaining, always interesting. I learn something every time that I'm on with you, and so it's a give and take process.
Okay, I'll tell you what, we'll do it by phone unless you're healthy, brother. How's that? I want you to come in and give me this thing here.
Just kidding. Good.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Take care. Appreciate you giving
Thank
up
you,
your
Scott.
Saturday.
Take care. We'll see you soon. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye now. Kevin Welch, Helitech, 800-246-9721. I do appreciate Kevin and he gives up his time with his family and all that, so it's kind of nice. I appreciate him doing that. Stay tuned. We've got the Rick Edelman Show coming up next right here after the Home Improvement Show. And then after that, we have that Business of Family Business Show, always a good one. My gosh, I love listening to that because some of those names around St. Louis, you know, businesses, names you've heard of for decades. It's just kind of neat. You know, you get to, wow, these guys are smarter than I thought. I didn't know that. So anyway, I urge you, I think just a couple of good shows, Rick Edelman and Business of Family Business. Stay tuned here on KMOX. And remember, prepare yourself for these very, very cold temperatures coming in next week. Turn your thermostat up, let the blower motor run, open the cabinet doors below your sinks, and stay warm there. God bless you here on KMOX.